Sector Podcast with a K. I'm Christian Corley. And with me is Gareth Cavanagh. Hello, Gareth.
Hello. Scraping the barrel once more.
Do you know, speaking of scraping the barrel, and apropos of absolutely nothing that we were talking about prior to the intro there, I've just tried, well, I think probably the second time I've had it, smoked black pudding for my breakfast.
Well, that sounds quite exotic.
In a breakfast bun. It was because, you know how black pudding has become, quote, superfood?
I didn't know this.
Yes, apparently it is a superfood. Like things like quinoa and
is that so?
Cranberry juice and stuff like that.
Well, do you know what's nice about this is I actually like black pudding.
Well, I
don't
do as well, usually. Well, now this smoked black pudding I got from one of the great shows of Yorkshire last year, the Stokesley Show.
Nice.
I stand there. And a little bit of it is very tasty. But a whole slice of it is a bit overwhelming, so you have to have it with something else. But when that something else is gone, like the bacon and egg and mushrooms that I had in my breakfast bun this morning, you've just left with the smoked black pudding, and it's quite tricky to consume.
Now, is it quite dry?
Is it what?
Quite dry?
It's not quite dry, no. It's got all the same moisture that you'd expect from a black pudding. But it did leave me feeling like I'd had a great breakfast, and then I was just left with this bit of bottom of the barrel scraping. But I'm not going to complain too much because it was like £5.
That sound like your sort of, you know, your sort of Tesco basic black pudding.
It certainly wasn't.
This is your connoisseur. I haven't had black pudding for ages, actually, but you've made me think that I haven't had black pudding on its own. It is always in concert with something else.
I've been trying to lose weight since Christmas. Obviously, I failed today, but the thing is, I'm having difficulty finding cereals that don't end up lodged in my mouth for the rest of the day without taking to the bathroom and using the old floss harp. So I thought, I'm just going to have bacon and egg and stuff in a bun. And then I remembered the black pudding, so I thought for that.
Well, now and I'm then wishing. Afterwards.
Yeah. Well, now I'm wishing I could have substituted. Hey, you see what I've done there? Substituted deep smoked black pudding for maybe a sausage or a standard black pudding. And that's what we're talking about today. Substitutions.
Very good. Yeah, very good. Very good.
Gareth has given me the great idea. Well, it's his idea. I'm taking it. Well, basically, this started with you watching Pyramids of Mars and thinking...
Last night I watched Pyramids of Mars and thought, it's brilliant. Yeah. It's brilliant.
Well, it is. It is.
Yeah. And I thought, but I could also see this working brilliantly and slightly differently with a different doctor and a different companion. And I thought I could see Davison in a sort of nice 80s make of Pyramids of Mars, little bit of Say with Ultraviolence with, say, Tegan. And I thought that would work. That would work. And in fact, I couldn't think of a single doctor, single companion combo that Pyramids of Mars wouldn't work with.
Yeah.
Do you see where I'm going?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
So McCoy and Ace,
yeah,
I could see that. Although I think McCoy would probably struggle a bit with the big Sutek confrontation in part four. He doesn't do anger very well, McCoy. He's good at devious and sly, but the big ranty speeches, you are an abhorrence and all that.
All dressing as a small mummy.
Yes, again, a challenge. a definite challenge. That a few of them would struggle with, but other than that, other than that, I think it would work with someone else. And I got me thinking, well, what other stories could be as good, different, or maybe better if they had a different doctor and companion at the helm? So, because I've had a whole morning and four cups of tea to think about this, and you haven't.
No.
You've only had black pudding and a suggestion 5 minutes ago. It's probably a bit hard, but what's your gut reaction when I say that? What would you think? What could be better? Some things could be better with Pertwee or something like that.
It's not something I've ever spent a lot of time thinking about. I've obviously, when you're watching first series of Doctors, you think that episode's clearly written for the previous Doctor.
Yeah. First season's a bit like that.
Say again?
Tom Baker's first season's a bit like
exactly,
that.
Yes, exactly, yeah. So there is that element to it. I don't know. You mentioned Nimon earlier, before we started recording. And you said how you didn't think any other doctor could do it. But I'm not entirely convinced. In terms of the setting, I don't think it's a million miles away from something that the first doctor could have slotted into.
Yes, I could see him rambling around with Stephen and Dodo, pointing his cane at things. But would it be Horns of Nymon? You know, I mean, without that...
It'd be the Keys of Nymon.
He would be the Keys of Nymon, yeah. But I couldn't see any other doctor attacking that material in that same sort of frame of mind. I just couldn't. David Tennant, possibly. David Tennant in full-on comedy mode with a full comedy Murray Gold score. Possibly. But that's it. And even then, I don't think it would be right.
Yeah. I think that's probably the closest... It is the closest in tone, isn't it? That kind of...
Late
Third
Baker,
series, Tennant.
Manic David Tennant. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. They're close. Isn't it telling that they're both the most popular with the public, pound for pound?
Mm.
You know, that late flowering of Tom Baker, you know, mega ratings. It's still people's sort of touchstone of what the Doctor's like, you know, a bit mad, a little bit sort of irreverent. I read the best description of Tom Baker's the Fourth Doctor the other day, that his Doctor... is someone who's thrillingly rude to everyone he meets who isn't Sarah Jane. And I thought, wow, that's so true. That's so true. But yeah, you're right. And then Tom, you know, Tennant is miles ahead of all the other doctors in terms of recognition and popularity, I think. And I think he's going to take a while to be beaten. So there is something in that. So yeah, so maybe you could insert Tennant into any of those season 17s and you could, but I'm not sure maybe you could insert Tom Baker into most of Tennant's stories. I could see him in Gridlock.
Tom and Gridlock. Well, that's a funny thing because Gridlock draws a lot from Doctor Who magazine strips, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
And obviously there's a lot of Fourth Doctor in the Doctor Who magazines, or Doctor Who comic, Doctor Who Weekly.
Yeah, and Doctor Who Weekly is a unique Pat Mills take on the Doctor, actually.
Yeah.
It's like a sort of hyper reality Tom Baker. Cool, we've opened a can of worms here. Troughton is quite... You could move Troughton around a bit because he is quite... He has that versatility. You know, you could certainly stick Troughton into any of McCoy's stories.
Oh, easily, yeah. Imagine Remembrance with Troughton, the Second Doctor.
Oh, well, do you know what? I was thinking, Delta and the Bannerman was the one that jumped to mind.
Right.
I could see Troughton running around that and enjoying himself and go, oh, my giddy aunt, and all the hoots and jumping around. But I could also see Troughton being stunning in Fenric.
Because
he doesn't always get that meaty sort of material to chew on, Troughton. Pertwee? Now, Pertwee's an odd one. Pertwee's probably harder to replace.
He is because of a lot to do with the setting, I think, and visually, you got the Earthbound stuff, and you got that visual, you got that 70s-ness of it as well, that very kind of, that pop culture 70s-ness that you don't have with the late 70s.
There's a sense that he's settled into 70s London as well, that he's quite happy. He's got you'd imagine he's got a nice townhouse in Belgravia and servants and, you know, he's down the club and, you know, you can imagine he's going to the theatre and he's kind of enjoying it in a way that no other doctor probably would. Although I wonder if you could swap in for Hartnell.
Yeah, you could put Hartnell into some of that. Yeah. You look at a few Pertwee's. I mean, I was thinking earlier of Day of the Daleks.
Where things
have changed slightly. And in terms of, like, what travel and everything. Have they changed at that point?
Yeah, that's right. Hart would have dicky fit, wouldn't he? That whole sort of time changing around him.
So there's that aspect of him. I thought maybe, but I don't. It would be a very different take on it. But I think maybe you could put the Ninth Doctor in it.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting, actually, because wasn't that was that was Russell's first stab at it when he did his Doctor Who 2000 reboot idea in 98-99, which the Doctor was, it was basically what he did with Damaged Goods, with the Doctor living on a London council estate for months with the TARDIS buggered. And that is a delicious idea. And I could see Eccleston going into his mysterious little council flat, living on Rose's estate. And I suppose we still got the echoes of that. That would, yeah, so that would work. So he'd still go in and work for UNIT. But really, and he'd still be rude to the Brigadier because,
oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, because Pertwee is pretty rude to everyone apart from Sergeant Benson. I think he does. Benson get some grief occasionally? No,
I
no,
think, I think he just feels sorry for Benton, doesn't he?
He does feel that.
I don't
Benton
think he actually likes him.
No, he does. He's not going out for a night in the town with Benton, but he quite likes the fact that Benton always remembers to bring him a nice cup of tea.
Yeah.
But Eccleston. Yeah, you're right. A sort of unit-bound Eccleston would have been fun. Yeah, that would have worked. Oh, we're cooking on gas here.
Yeah, there's also old Capaldi as well, who hasn't had the best Doctor Who stories for us to kind of maybe swap about with, but he himself could pop up in various other places quite well, I think.
I think he's a good trade for early Tom Baker.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of grumpy, unhappy, rude to everyone who isn't Sarah Jane, you know, slightly gloomy, nihilistic, angry. He's a really good swap.
Except the difference being that he's also rude to the companion.
They've missed off that vital rude to everyone except Sarah Jane. He's just rude to everyone.
Yeah.
That's true, actually.
Make sure he's rude to the person the audience identifies with.
But you're right. I could see us sticking Capaldi into the Deadly Assassin and it being compelling and brilliant. Different, but compelling and brilliant. And actually, Capaldi and Jenna would have been pretty good in Pyramids of Mars now, I think.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. There's not too many companions you would trust with a gun. You wouldn't trust Perry with a gun.
No. No, that's true. Yeah, that does kind of that does hone it down a bit. Yeah, who would you trust with a gun? Tegan's quite handy in Earthshock.
Yeah, I think so.
Have a go.
Yeah, I think you trust Leela as well, but I'm not sure whether you trust Leela to get the timing right.
Oh, you'd trust Leela every time with the gun.
Would you trust her to get the timing right? Would you be a little bit trigger happy and think, oh, I'll just shoot it now?
Possibly.
Before the doctor's got clear, you know.
She would just keep shooting at Marcus Garvin. You know, he's the evil one. You know, there'd be everything that'd come out. Janus Thorns, knives, crowbars, you know, the lot.
All right, well, hello. While we're on Leela, who would you... Yes. What other doctor could you... obviously, you'd have to keep Leela in there, probably. Who would you stick in Face of Evil instead of Tom?
That's interesting. Because Leela and Tom have that weird... not quite right, not quite their chemistry. And you can tell that Tom Baker doesn't approve of this knife-wielding, gun-slinging, incredibly adept at murdering people companion, which is brilliant and bold and pure Bob Holmes. Who else would put up with it? Colin Baker.
Mm.
You'd stick, you know, sort of morally...
You can buy the fact that Colin Baker's been frigging around with a computer. The Sixth Doctor's been frigging around with a computer and got it wrong.
Oh, you know, I mean, because he's mad as a box of frogs in Twin Dilemma, and then we don't see him again until Attack of the Cybermen. When Perry more or less says, you know, your mind's gone a bit wibbly. You've called me all sorts, Jamie. So yeah, I could imagine him turning up and buggering up the supercomputer. Yeah, actually, Colin Baker and Leela make for an interesting pair, and I could see Colin and Leela in Talons. I could see them in Robots of Death. Yeah, actually, that mix, that works well, but I can't think of a single other doctor that you could put Leela with successfully.
Have Big Finish tried this yet?
I bet they have. I bet there's few people Colin Baker hasn't travelled with in the TARDIS now. And maybe Pertwee as well. No. I can't see Pertwee being keen on the old Janus Thorns. There'd be some terrible moralising speeches.
I don't think so, no.
Brisby is the first to blow the base up, with considerable regret, of course.
Every time,
with regret. And for Davison, it's, well, there should have been another way. It's like the ultimate get out of jail, isn't it? I wonder. I'm pretty sure it's... I mean, she's awkward with Tom, that's right. And although you don't know how much of that is down to Tom and Louise having that really difficult chemistry at the time, the sort of loathing, mutual loathing that was going on for much of the run. Yeah, Colin's about the only one. Yeah. Yeah, Sixth Doctor is about it.
Yeah, sorry, it's just chimed at by defenses.
Is that big... have chipped in and said, yes, we've already done Colin with with Leela. Thank you for your interest.
So what about Matt Smith? We've been silent on Matt Smith so far.
Well, I mean, the theory is that he based a lot of his take on Troughton. Matt Smith in Tomb of the Cybermen, he's quite appealing. I could sort of see that happening. You'd have to get Murray to tone the music down a bit. You know, would he play the comedy a little bit too overtly? I'm not sure. But Troughton's not a bad touchstone.
No, it's not. I never found Matt's comedy that overt, really. I think he's very subtle with his comedy. Although that might be something that happened later on, rather than...
I haven't watched them for so long. I now doubt my own memory on that point.
I'm thinking of the Day of the Doctor when he meets the curator, and there's a understatedness to it.
That's a lovely scene. I do find myself out of step with most of fandom on Matt Smith, actually, because I know he seems to be universally loved. But I always found his instinct was to look for the comedy in any situation and magnify it. Mm-hmm. And then everything else seemed to pick up on the tone of that. So Murray Gold would reach into the comedy drawer for the music, and other people would go a little bit larger. Maybe you stick Matt Smith. Maybe Matt Smith can do season 17, Tom Baker.
Mm.
Maybe you can swap him and Tom Baker, the later flowering. I could certainly see Matt Smith with the pirate captain. I could see him giving us that famous angry what's it for speech.
What's it for, yeah.
Yeah, and being really good, actually. But also doing all the fun knockabout stuff. Yeah, Matt and Tom also interchangeable. Probably more than Tennant, actually. Because Tennant's still got that sort of lonely child aspect about him, whereas Matt Smith's kind of moved on a bit and is more like our later Tom Baker, you know, joie de vivre. There for the adventure. Yeah, I mean, you could possibly even City of Death. It works as well.
Yeah.
And in fact, you could put Matt Smith's Doctor with Romana very comfortably. And they would look good together.
Well, there's probably a very good reason for that.
Oh, well.
they did, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah, there's obviously the River Song thing there, so...
Personally
speaking, I never really felt River Song works that well with any of them. So, you know, that's just my opinion.
River Song doesn't work for me. She's quite good on her first appearance, and the mysterious side is quite good. She's pretty good in the Angels one, actually, the Angels two-parter.
Yes.
It's after that that I feel everything after that we don't need. Or it's a diminishing return to the point where when she came back in the Angels one, I thought, oh, River Song, nice. And I quite enjoyed the jailbreak and the lipstick. That was quite good. So four or five appearances in, you're like, oh, God, it's River Song. You know, show us something new. Oh, you haven't got anything new. Shit. Yeah, that's true. And I'd never thought of her like a poor man's Romana. But I think you were onto something there.
Yeah, I do feel that quite often. It's just, you know, she can do anything the Doctor can do. She can fly the TARDIS. She can solve stuff. She makes the Doctor redundant a lot of the time. So
she is Romana. She is Romana in Horns and Nymon.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
But without the charm.
Without the charm. Yeah,
I'm someone who's. I've always been a fan of Alex Kingston before Doctor Who as well. I've always thought she was good. She's not necessarily. She's an actress who's very similar in everything that she does, but she's not without charisma. And I find her entertaining to watch. And that spreads into Doctor Who, really. Whereas obviously, Lala Ward-Romana is. I'm not for any moment claiming to be an expert on Lala Ward's career beyond Doctor Who and a single appearance in The Professionals. But she does have that perfect chemistry with the Doctor.
Lala is Landed Gentry.
Yeah, exactly. Lala is
Lady Bangor. And so she carries that haughtiness and air of superiority. Because it's completely authentic, that disdain. You can't buy that. Mary Tam has a good stab at it, but Mary Tam is a lass from Bradford at heart. She doesn't quite have the Lala-ness and then when you add that to some really sparkling, silly writing and a ridiculously, effervescent chemistry with Tom Baker for a short time. I'm not counting season 18 in this because their chemistry is dreadful in that. But, in sort of season 17, it is just absolute perfection. And she's got that authenticity. And I'm pretty sure you could stick Lala Ward with a few other doctors and get a different result, but a very satisfying one.
Well, they did it with Paul McGann, didn't they? Big Finish.
Yeah, they did it with McGann. But I'm thinking how she would fluster, say, Peter Davison.
Mm-hmm.
That would be interesting. He's completely flustered Davison. It would be interesting putting her with the Imperious Pertwee and having a real clash of egos there. Mm-hmm. Because, the Tom Baker Doctor is a lot of bluster, but there's a lot of insecurity under there. Not the edifice that is Pertwee. Of course, the one they've always talked about for years, and now I can see it as being brilliant but different, is I first remember reading about this in, I think, DWB about 30 years ago, when someone said, can you imagine Pertwee doing the Davros two-hander in Genesis of the Daleks? And I remember thinking, wow, yes, I could. It would be different, but it would be brilliant. And it would give Pertwee the material, because I think, there's always been that sense that Pertwee's phoning it in a lot of the time and just, he's a bit...
Especially with the Dalek ones. I think that's why Day of the Daleks is my favourite. One of my favourite Pertwee stories.
Controller.
Yeah.
You, sir, are a Quisling. All that. Yeah.
Although I do sometimes wish he'd break into Candyman, but there you go.
Well, Candyman?
Yeah, the controller, the actual place controller. His name escapes me at the moment.
Aubrey Morris.
He's the sweet shop owner in Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory.
Is he?
Yes.
What, the one who sells the golden ticket on to the Charlie?
On the Charlie Bucket, yeah. And he sings, the candy man can.
Does he?
Yeah.
What a versatile chap. he's very good, actually. He's brilliant in Blake Seven's Gambit, actually.
Mm.
Where he plays brilliantly. He's the head of the space casino, of course, because we love a space casino. And he's a double act going on with John Leeson. Yeah, he's very good. He is. He's great. He's underrated, isn't he?
Definitely.
I think he only died a few years back.
He did. That's right. Yeah. I think it was in the Casterbridge days, so I remember writing about it. Aubrey Woods.
Aubrey Woods.
2013, yes. He passed on, yeah.
Yeah. Aubrey Morris, I think, is the... he's the captain in the bath in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I don't think he's dead. So, apologies for killing you off prematurely, Aubrey. And condolences to the great Aubrey Woods, who is brilliant. But yeah, I can imagine him with Davros, though, Pertwee.
Yeah.
Must have been written with him in mind, because that whole season 12, Revenge of the Cybermen, very Pertwee. I could see Pertwee and the Cybermen and Voga and all that. It's very Pertwee setup. I don't know, Ark in Space. Could I see Pertwee delivering the big Homo sapiens monologue? Not sure.
Not sure I could. No, it would be very different, I think, wouldn't it?
But Robot's Pertwee story, in all but name.
Yeah. Well, while we're focusing on that era,
Yeah, go on, go on.
I was going to say, Harry Sullivan.
Oh, lovely Harry.
What could you do with Harry, with another doctor? Could he work with another doctor?
Oh, yeah. I mean, certainly the first doctor. I mean, Stephen Taylor is basically Harry Sullivan. He's just a big chap to knock people out that the doctor's pointed a stick at and gone, ooh. So, yeah, you certainly put him with the first doctor. I think he would work as a sort of cozy travelling extension of UNIT with Pertwee. I think because you've already got the Sarah Jane chemistry going, which is quite good. And the Doctor is thrillingly rude to Harry. I mean, I don't think he has a nice thing to say about Harry.
No.
For, at any point, which I think Pertwee would have been all right with as well. But who else? Yeah, you're right. Beyond that, it gets quite difficult. You certainly don't get a sense. There's no chemistry really between Mike Craze, is Ben Jackson, and Troughton. Although he does work quite well with Hartnell, I think. Yeah, poor old Harry. He's a moment in time that you can't easily shift around, apart from maybe Pertwee and maybe Hartnell. But they're sort of maybes, because I'm not sure Stephen is that successful with Hartnell. He certainly doesn't fit into Davison's youthful TARDIS.
No.
He'd be no good with you know, I don't think that Colin Baker would have got very far trying to strangle him. he certainly doesn't work with... he doesn't work with anyone else. I could see him turning up in a Tenant One as head of MI5, but not as a companion.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? You have to change the dynamic.
Yeah, he becomes a quasi-brigadier figure, I think. I think that's all he worked.
Which Justin Richards did with the System Shock novel on its sequel.
That's what I've got.
20 years ago.
Is it good? Does it work?
It doesn't. System Shock's really good. It's one of my favourite Doctor Who books.
Does Harry become a Rumman, or is he all right?
He's all right.
Yes. Oh, well, that's we like. So, what's the moral of the story on this, then? Is it that Doctor Who's completely interchangeable or not?
I think it depends. Well, there's another element that we've not looked at, really, isn't there? And that's kind of... Well, I mean, we have, but we haven't, and that's the stories. Because we know we can swap Doctors into different stories, but can we swap different stories into different Doctors? Because they're not exactly the same thing. Because if you're going to change a story for a different Doctor, then you're going to change elements of the story. As I mentioned, with that, which is really what I did with the Eccleston thing before, so...
That's very true. Yeah, that's true, that. I can't see McCoy working in any of Colin Baker's stories, or indeed working in any of Davison's stories. Yeah. Not a single one. I just don't think it works. Now, in the modern era, I think it's all a little bit more interchangeable. I think you could, certainly within the showrunners' eras, I think Stephen Moffat broadly writes the Doctor exactly the same, no matter who's playing him.
Yeah.
I think Russell doesn't, but his era still feels like a sort of interchangeable whole.
Yeah, you know, I'd broadly go along with that, yeah.
Yeah. But I think, the other era is a lot harder. I think you can probably swap round a lot of early Tom Baker with a lot of later Pertwee. I think you can swap round later Hartnell with earlier Troughton, because it's essentially the same thing. It's the Jerry Davis verse.
We haven't really mentioned McGann, have we? Beyond that one finish mention. And I know televisually there isn't a lot to mention.
Well, McGann can be inserted into almost any era, because technically there's so little to go on.
Yeah. That's what I was going to suggest, yeah.
Night of the Doctor, though? Now, that does feel more modern. That feels very different to the 96. Now, 96 era Doctor Who, that does show, actually, that they're really... McCoy didn't fit into that. It didn't look right. He has a great TARDIS. Lovely TARDIS. But he doesn't feel right in that setting for some reason.
Yeah. It also leaves you with the problem that it's not a problem, but you know, when you go into sort of like TARDIS theory, for want of a better word, that the Eighth Doctor's got his predecessor's TARDIS rather than one that's his own identity. If you take McCoy out of it completely and just start with a bloke who gets rushed into hospital or whatever,
and he walks into his new TARDIS.
Yeah,
that's how you would do it now.
Yeah,
I suppose this was God, what's his name? Seagal.
Philip Seagal, yeah.
Philip Seagal, almost the lost man, the lost voice of Doctor Who now, bizarrely. I suppose that was him being a fan, wanting to have that vital connection.
Which he didn't need. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that sort of, it's the first thing Russell ditches.
Exactly,
he just has this bloke turning up in a box.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much all you need. You know, no need for a wig. So maybe that's the moral of the story. So go on then. So bring this full circle. Who else can you see working best apart from who we've got in Pyramids of Mars then?
Pyramids of Mars. Yes, it's a tricky one. I can't really argue with you. I don't think there's anyone who would do a worse job. I think everyone could fit into it perfectly. And it is one of my favourite Doctor Who's. So I do find it very difficult to place any different Doctor in there. But maybe I should change this into who I would like to have seen in the Pyramid of Mars. Maybe.
Go on.
Maybe that's a different way of doing it.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know, maybe it's just because of the scarcity of episodes. I don't know. The Ninth Doctor.
Yeah. You could certainly see him being brilliant in the big Sutekh confrontation.
Definitely, yeah. You know, playing around with the tech. Cause he doesn't do an awful lot of playing around with tech, the Ninth Doctor. But he does like flick his sonic screwdriver over a few things, so he could just with a sonic screwdriver. Oh look, you've just invented the Marconi scope or whatever, or the radio telescope. That's not supposed to happen. Whatever.
Could see him really cold and unsympathetic with Lawrence.
Yeah, yeah, and I think he does that really well, Eccleston.
Yeah, he does
throughout. So yeah,
yeah, because that's part of his growing learning curve, isn't it? That Rose is. Is knocking the edges off him and reminding him.
I'll go with nine.
I like that. We need a bit of fan art now.
And of course, Rose is a reliable companion. Rose isn't going to shoot too soon. You could trust Rose with a gun.
You could trust Rose with the future of the universe. That's true, and she'd be good at it. And she'd have been very good actually in that setting. But she'd have known when to take it seriously. And would have been very good, actually. God, that would have been a fantastic. Tight 50-minute edit. Wow. The Ninth Doctor, Pyramids of Mars. That is exciting. Damn it. Why did I get that?
So there you go. There you go.
I like that. Yeah. Okay, you win, Mr. Corley.
Speaking of Rose Tyler... and this gives us a quick opportunity to mention the new Target novelizations.
Oh, yes, yes. Stellar work by our good pal Anthony Dry.
Anthony Dry's done the artwork for Rose, hasn't he? And the front cover is obviously the Doctor, number 9, and Rose Tyler. It's not Rose Tyler number 1, it's Rose Tyler number 2. And a lot of people are getting upset about it, that it's series 2 Rose rather than series 1 Rose.
But how authentic? You know, Achilleos just had whatever pictures were in his scrapbook or whatever that was in the Radio Times that year, you know, and just used that. No, you know, he would have just used it. Oh, poor Tone. Is he copping grief from the Ultras?
I believe he has had a few discussions on... online about this, but he doesn't seem to be particularly phased, which is good.
And quite right, because Pound, the finest vector artist in the country.
Well, if he's not, the other one is extremely quiet and not working.
Well, yeah, so they're probably doing very boring things like biscuit packets.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. So
quick recap. Anthony's done Rose, Christmas Invasion, which has been adapted by Jenny Colgan.
Well, he did a brilliant Christmas Invasion 12 years ago. This is how he got how he got the gig. He did those off his own bat. Yeah. Genius.
Yeah.
So in the right place. Yeah.
And he's also done The Day of the Doctor.
Nice. It's nice when the good guys win.
Isn't it just?
Yeah.
Yes. Lovely work. He showed me the Rose one some months ago, and I was absolutely blown away by it.
Oh, he's good, isn't he? Yeah. Overdue for a pint with Anthony, I must admit.
There you go. So,
if you're listening, you know...
we're going to get him on the podcast one day.
Oh, we must. Does he not do them?
He's agreed in principle, so...
Okay, nice.
Just getting him on, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'd love it. So those novelizations are available shortly. So you should be able to get them on Amazon, or you'll be able to pick them up at Forbidden Planet. And I can tell you that there is a signing at Forbidden Planet on March the 19th of Russell T Davies and Stephen Moffat and Jenny Colgan and one Anthony Dry as well.
Amazing. A galaxy of stars.
That's down in the big Forbidden Planet in London. A galaxy of stars indeed. Throughout the store. Tell us who you would swap. What your great Doctor Who swap pairing in the wrong story, timey-wimey things. Let us know on Facebook and we'll give them a mention next time round, and we'll have a chat about it. From Gareth and myself, until next time, it is goodbye.
Cheerio.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.